good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our book pick segment. It is one of the highlights of my week. I hope it is for you as well. We get two booksellers in a room, or maybe more than two, but two bookstores, representatives from two bookstores, to come in and tell us about great things that are on their shelves or great things that are coming onto the shelves. The books are all over the map, and there are things that you've heard of, things that you've never heard of, things that you should hear about. And it's a wonderful, wonderful part of the program that I greatly enjoy because we have such a wonderful stable of independent bookstores in our listening region. This morning, we welcome Giovanni Bovin from the Book Loft in Great Barrington. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm well. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Giovanni is the owner of the Book Loft in Great Barrington, and always nice to have him. Also, owner of the bookstore in Lenox is Matt Tannenbaum. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Hello, Joe. Nice to see you again.
So you two are bookstore neighbors, but I assume you don't, it's not like a you're not competitors, really.
Colleague.
Yeah, colleagues.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. I mean, you're far enough away from each other.
We're in different stables.
Yep.
Okay.
I was listening to the show earlier.
Yes. A little Equus humor, sure. That's good, Matt. I like that. Well, it's wonderful to have you both here, and I'm great fans of your individual stores and your work, so it's very nice to have you with us. Giovanni, let's begin with you. Where would you like to start?
I'm going to start with a new title that comes out today. It's Indian Burial Ground by Nick Medina, and this, I like to think of it as a slow burn. It is two alternative perspectives, past and present. We open up with a car accident. This young man has ran out in front of a vehicle and has been killed. And then we meet Noemi, who is the gentleman's girlfriend. And something doesn't sit right. He was handsome, well-loved, had a rising career in a news broadcast station, and this is being treated as a suicide, and it does not feel right to her. But alternatively, her Uncle Louie, who is not that much older than her, returns to the reservation after about 9 years away, just in time for an annual traditional celebration, and he starts to tell the story of one summer about 30 some odd years back when Noemi was just a toddler and he was on the cusp of manhood, where the reservation had seen a lot of tragedies. The most vulnerable members of the community were dying in horrible accidents, and then seemingly to sit up in their coffins during the funerals and maybe say something. Maybe it's just gas escaping the body, but something is not right. Something is really kind of weird. So, dual perspectives, Indian Burial Ground on our shelves today.
Great. Indian Burial Ground by Nick Medina. All right, Matt.
Hey, Giovanni, the first book that I have is by Mark Polizzati called Why Surrealism Matters. And surrealism, as I understand it, is a rebellion it's not much of a rebellion. It's a rebellion against what was centrist at the time, back in the early 20th century. And I think I think the book that you just described fits into surrealism. I think it's like, this doesn't happen in the real world.
Right.
And yet, surreal is not real. It is more than real.
Mm-hmm.
And this is André Breton started the movement back in 1924. Actually, it started with automatic writing before that. Breton and another French poet, Supot, I can't pronounce his name, wrote a book with automatic writing. They sat for a certain amount of time and wrote, stopped. The next day started again. No idea what they were writing, but this was tapping into the unconscious. So this was early 20th century. You got Joyce writing, you got Freud doing, and you have the painters coming out of what was, let's say, realism, the realist paintings, and then impressionism, and then more than impressionism or deeper than impressionism was surrealism. Mm-hmm. So Mark Palazzotti is an author of a number of books, and he's also, Joe, you'll be happy to know if you don't recognize his name, he's the translator of
Thomas Modiano.
Patrick Modiano. Patrick Modiano.
You got to give me half of that. Half credit.
Absolutely. You did good, man.
Okay.
So he's one of my favorite translators as well. And this is a lovely book, and it's part of the Yale series Why X Matters. And this is the newest one in the series, Why Surrealism Matters.
All right. Giovanni.
Next up, we've got one of Sherry's staff picks, Bless Your Heart by Lindy Ryan. And this is kind of deceptive because the book cover, I forgot the book at my office, but it looks like kind of a cozy, fun vampire novel. And it's not really. It does have its...
It's not that cozy.
It does have its kind of wit and humor. It's set in 1999 in Texas, small town, and the Evans women have been running the local funeral parlor for generations. They've also been protecting the town from zombie vampires for generations. And the youngest Evans woman, Luna, has now been told the secret, and she has more connection to this twisted legacy than she realizes. Again, this is a horror novel, so there's grit, there's gore, there's some frightening parts, but you also have this kind of southern grandma aspect with a 12-gauge shotgun. There's a lot of kind of wit and banter between a lot of the characters while also giving you, you know, as much thrill as you want in a good horror novel.
Excellent. It sounds great. Lindy Ryan is the author of Bless Your Heart. All right. Matt.
You know, Giovanni, I was going to save this one for last, but I'm going to have to follow you up. This next one I have is called It Lasts Forever and Then It's Over by Anne DeMarkin. Anne DeMarkin?
Yep, that's actually another one of Sherry's staff picks. Yep.
Sherry's favorite, too. So this is a novel. I just got an advance copy, and I've been struggling over the last marking period to come up with good novels that I really enjoy. And
did you refer to it as a marking period?
Yes.
I've never heard that phrase
on
of our
radio,
booksellers
right?
Using. That's, they're not on the air this week. They're in their marking period.
So it lasts forever and then it's over by Anne DeMarkin from New Directions publisher. And I want to talk about New Directions as a once upon a time a small press. We talk about small presses. So I started reading this without having any idea what it was about. And it's an afterlife novel. That's what I heard. It's afterlife. So, and early in the story, her arm falls off, and I said, "Oh well, that's what happens afterlife. That's fine. That's fine." I'm reading. I realize it's a zombie novel. I've never read a zombie novel before.
Yep.
And it's not. It doesn't have a lot of horror. It doesn't have. It has some beautiful, beautiful sentences. So I'm deep into this book. I kind of skipped ahead to the end, but now I'm going to go back and read the middle parts and find out. There's a journey going on. There's other body parts are falling off. As I say, I've never read zombie novels before, but following your lead, I'm right there. It lasts forever, and then it's over.
Talk a little bit about the press.
Yeah, so New Directions was started by James Laughlin back in the 30s. He was a would-be or wannabe poet. But he had inherited a lot of money, and his poet friends, notably Ezra Pound, said, "Laughlin, you're not that good a poet. Why don't you publish the rest of us?" And New Directions books to this day are on the colophon. It says New Directions books are published for James Laughlin. And why I mention small press is because there's a company called the Small Press Distribution, which was started back in the late 60s, 1969 in Berkeley, by two Bay Area booksellers. And they distributed, have over the last 55 years, distributed hundreds of small presses, including United Artists, which came out of Lenox, Massachusetts, Adastra Press, which is from Pelham, Northampton, Mass., a number of small presses, including City Lights. They didn't exclusively distribute City Lights. Dos Madres is another publisher. And we just had a poetry reading last week from with two poets from Dos Madres Press. Well, SPD, Small Press Distribution, closed their doors suddenly about 2 weeks ago in the middle of their marking period, in the middle of this time, and left all these publishers high and dry, left all the writers high and dry, left all the booksellers high and dry, because we can't get these books from these small publishers. My beginning in bookselling, Joe, I've told you, was with Black Sparrow Press out of Santa Barbara. They had these beautiful editions, and my first job was actually handling these books and putting them alphabetically on the shelf in the overstock room down at the Gotham Book Mart. And so I've been in love with small press books, and I have been carrying them for years. And these books are... SPD, about a year ago, because they were having money troubles, moved their warehouse, moved all their stock into a couple of different warehouses out of Berkeley. And now these books are locked in these other warehouses, and nobody has access to them.
So this is a story we hope eventually has a happy ending.
Has a happy ending, but there are publishers. One of the companies that owns the warehouse, it says, listen, you have 30 days, come and get your books. Well, some of these publishers are out of business. Yeah. Some of these publishers haven't been in business for years, but SPD carried their books, and we were still able to get them. And there's nobody to come and get those books.
I just weirdly picture you in a U-Haul hauling it out to Berkeley.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This has happened before in the small press world. And small SPD was, you know, always operating on a very tight margin.
Right.
And they got by on grants from foundations, and that all dried up.
Well, we'll hope for the best of small press distributors. Giovanni?
I'm kind of following on the end-of-life novel theme. Begin Again by Helly Acton. Sherry read this one, and we've all had moments in life where we kind of question our life decisions, like major life decisions, where we go to school, who we go out with, where we go for dinner. And this is one of those types of novels. She calls it a sliding door type story, where the main character gets to find out some of the answers to these questions. After accidentally meeting her demise, she gets offered a chance to experience five different big moments in her life where she made life-changing decisions. And what would have happened if she had made a different decision, if she had gone left instead of right, if she had gone... married this guy or went out with that guy, whatever. It's a really easy to read novel. She says it's filled with British humor, and also is kind of one of those thinkers, like, what would happen if I made a different decision in my life? Like, what would have changed?
Yes. All good stuff. Begin Again by Helly Acton.
And who published that?
That, I believe, was distributed by Penguin Random House.
Penguin, okay.
Yep.
Right. So Penguin Random House also distributes this book, the next book on my list. Have anybody talked about this book yet until August?
No.
So this is the new Garcia Marquez novel.
I saw this in the store the other day, and I was greatly interested in it. But I hadn't heard about it. So I look forward to your thoughts.
Thank you. This is a lovely piece. This is a book that Gabo, as he was called, said, "Don't publish this. This is not good. Don't throw it away. Destroy it." At the end of his life, and his son said, or his children said, they didn't destroy it. They saved it, and they want to think that they want to say that he had memory loss at the end of his life, and maybe he also didn't realize just how good parts of it were, because parts of it are really good. Parts of it don't work. Parts of it are self-contradictory. It's a story. It's a very short. It's a novella about a woman who goes every August, until August is the name of the book. Every August she takes a ferry boat ride to an island to visit the grave of her mother, who had insisted on being buried on this island. And now this woman has been married, has a happy marriage, lovely children, very successful marriage. Every year, once a year, she goes to the island and visits her mother's grave and takes a lover, a new man, once just for a one-night stand, and then returns home. And it's a strange book. And some of it, you know, doesn't quite work because he didn't finish it. He didn't get to do the final edits or the final polishing of it. But it's lovely to know that you're in the presence of Gabriel Garcia Marquez again.
But it has an ending. There was an ending. It just wasn't fully gone through the revision and editing process.
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. Until August by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Giovanni.
All right, I'm going to bring it to a dark place again.
Oh, good.
This one is one of my staff picks.
I'm matching your book today. This is so cool.
This is Ghost Station by S.A. Barnes. This came out just last week. And this is space horror for fans of the Expanse series, but much smaller. Dr. Ophelia Bray has dedicated her career to helping people suffering from Eckhart-Reiser syndrome, or ERS. It's a form of madness often found kind of on isolated communities and on exploration teams as well, where the victims pretty much suffer a madness with violent, often deadly hallucinations and almost a homicidal paranoia, an entirely homicidal paranoia. So she signs up to go with this exploration crew, a survey team for on-site therapy, just to make sure that nothing bad happens, as a previous member of this crew had simply wandered off on a previous expedition. So her job is to make sure everyone is feeling okay, has the outlet to talk if they're not feeling comfortable, and things immediately start to go wrong.
Yeah.
It looks like ERS. Some of the crew members are behaving violently, erratically, paranoid, but it is spreading far too quickly for it to be just ERS. So they're on this planet, they're exploring alien architecture, and this is likely something that they have not encountered before, and they have no real idea of what this is. It looks like ERS, but it is something entirely different.
An abandoned plant, a hidden past, a deadly danger brings us to S.A. Barnes and Ghost Station, which is out now. Matt.
I'm going to take a break from dark.
Okay.
Just because I want to make sure that we have enough time for this book. This is a big art book called A Cruise on the Nile. And I'm going to read you what it says on the back. This book is an invitation to take a timeless cruise aboard the steamship Sudan, the last steamship still operating in Upper Egypt. Designed by Sir Thomas Cook at the beginning of the 20th century, saved from oblivion by two Frenchmen in love with travel and beauty, and still plies the water of the Nile, linking legendary cities and sites of antiquity. Joe, take a look at this book.
All right.
It starts off with a history, a timeline of Egyptian culture, and then comes all the way up to the late 19th century, travel and tourism, or even earlier, mid-19th century, the Rosetta Stone, 1922, discovery of the Rosetta Stone. And so these two Frenchmen found this old steamship that the Cook people had put together back in the early 20th century, and refurbished it and changed the engine room so it's more environmentally correct. And this is one beautiful, beautiful picture book.
Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Never had the people who traveled on the Sudan or on these other steamships included. There's a great picture of Queen Elizabeth of Belgium playing shuffleboard. There's Agatha Christie took a trip on the steamship, and then she wrote Death on the Nile. This is one beautiful book. I don't even know who the publisher is. It's a French publisher.
I kept looking, trying to find it. Original Travel or something, and then
yeah,
they have
Alban
an S,
Michelle.
And I
yeah.
have no idea
yeah.
what that means. But
just one of these times when I was looking at a publisher's catalog, and I opened up to this page, and I said, "This is a book we have to have." Brought it in. The first day I had it, a couple came in. They were looking for a book on Egypt for a friend of theirs. They had the Stacy Schiff biography of
yes.
Cleopatra.
Yep.
And I said, that's a great book. Put it back on the shelf. Let me show you this one. No apologies to Stacy. And they bought this one instead.
Great.
It's a great one.
That's a beautiful, beautiful volume. All right, Giovanni.
We're going to finish this one off a little lighter. This is Mal Goes to War by Edward Ashton, author of Mickey 7 and Antimatter Blues. It is a sci-fi. It's based on Earth this time, hopefully in the far distant future. But Mal, short for malware and definitely not a robot, he's actually a Silico-American, as he likes to be referred to, has a fascination watching the conflicts of the monkeys, us. Currently, the country seems to be in a civil war between the puritanical humanists, people that believe that your body should remain unaugmented from birth, and then there's the Federals, the actual army. So Mal encounters a whole slew of different people, from a humanist to an augmented, she looks like a child, but she's like in her late teens and has all of that teenage angst wrapped up in like an 8-year-old body. It's hilarious. She's such a foul-mouthed little thing. So it is a really fun novel. And it also kind of discusses, you know, the differences between, you know, being in the body you're born with versus having physical or genetic augmentations for whatever reason. So this is definitely a good one if you're a fan of Terry Pratchett or John Scalzi.
Wonderful stuff. Matt, we have about a minute and a half.
Eleanor Metcalf was the granddaughter of Herman Melville. And she was bequeathed by Melville's, by her grandmother, Lizzie, the bread box in which Lizzie had stuffed Herman Melville's last unfinished novel, Billy Budd.
Billy Budd, that's right.
So this book is called Billy Budd in the Bread Box, The Story of Herman Melville and Eleanor by John Alays, who is the writer in residence at Arrowhead.
Yep.
And John and I are old friends because this is 1924 was the year that Billy Budd was published. So this is 100th anniversary of that. And so this is a children's story about Eleanor, a young girl who loves her grandfather, goes on long walks with him, and knows there's a secret. He's got a secret. Is it in his coat? Is it in his beard? Or is it in his eye, sparkle behind his eyes? His wife doesn't want him to write anymore because he gets pilloried by the critics.
Yeah.
So his secret is he's writing this novel, and Eleanor becomes the owner of this novel, and then discovers it and brings it
in
to the
bread
critics.
Box.
And Billy Budd, which is this great novella, and Melville House, the publisher, is named after Herman Melville because of this book of Billy Budd.
Billy Budd in the
Bread Box
by Jana Lays. Is that how
Jana Lays, right.
All right. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for being with us. I know you have cool things going on at the stores, so please check it out online. And you can go to bookloft.com. You can go to the bookstore.
Bookstoreinlenox.com.
Thebookstoreinlenox.com and find out more information. Giovanni, Matt, you're the best. Thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Joe.
We'll be right back.